This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome to the VSiN Weekend Morning Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Let's roll, baby. Happy Sunday, one and all. Welcome in. It is the VSiN Weekend Morning Line. It is John Jastrzemski alongside my main man, Will Hill. We're guiding you through the next 3 hours. Whole lots of winners coming your way. And yes, there'll be a ton of football as training camps are underway. We'll break down a couple of these divisions, have some plays as far as that goes. We move closer and closer to the start of the college football season as well. But Will Hill, is some people may have been snoozing on a Saturday night on the East Coast, or maybe you're out on the West Coast, and it was right after the Boston Red Sox defeated the Los Angeles Dodgers for the second consecutive day. You know, the Dodgers always, may, dare I say, have something up their sleeve. The problem is I didn't expect that ace in the hole, no pun intended, to be Tarek Skubal, who is leaving the Detroit Tigers. He goes and joins the back-to-back World Series champs. Couple of prospects on their way to Detroit. But once again, Will Hill, the rich get richer. The diatribe, the discourse, the debate is being brought up as far as the salary cap is concerned. But from an odds perspective, because you're listening to VSiN, you dialed into VSiN, you're wondering how much does a line move after a trade like this? Not a whole lot, but man, a team that already has Yamamoto, a team that already has Ohtani, a team that's going to get Blake Snell and Tyler Glasnow back. They got Robleski, who made the All-Star team. He's their fifth starter. Now they're going to add Tarek Skubal. You can't make it up.
You can't. You know, looking at DraftKings right now, plus 150 to win the whole thing. Shop around, maybe you get a better number. I'm not, like, cutting in line to bet it, JJ, but if you told me right now, hey, Dodgers at plus money, at plus, you know, you get 1.5 times your money back, I'm just going to put it in the account. I'm going to forget about it, and come, you know, October, come Halloween, I'll remember, and I'll be happy I have that. I don't think it's the worst bet, but this feels like, from a odds standpoint and just non-gambling standpoint, it feels like a tipping point. It feels like Durant going to the Warriors, where the deck is just so stacked now, with labor negotiations coming up, and you can question why the Brewers and the Rays of the world didn't do it. When you look with what he went for, man, you and I are no expert on prospects, but it doesn't seem like it was the haul that some people thought. River Ryan actually pitched pretty well. 2024, 4 starts, 1.13 ERA. He's got some ability. He's been kind of blocked in the Dodger system, but he's 27. He turns 28 in a couple weeks. He's got a 4.5 ERA in AAA. I know in AAA there's, you know, some launching pads, but a couple of minor league outfielders. It's just really not the haul that Tampa, Milwaukee, if you're really going for it and say, hey, we're stuck, we can't get past the Dodger, we want to win, you know, we got to come up with a package to beat it. This is a package that was beatable, in my opinion. So I'm sure all the takes are going to fly here. Who knows when we'll see baseball after this season? I think it's going to be ugly, and you can make the case that baseball needs a reform. I always applaud the Dodgers for going for it, saying, you know what, we got the money. A lot of these teams have the money. They just choose to put it in their pocket. The Dodgers spend it, but certainly a tipping point. The Dodgers are going to be really tough to beat here, and Tarek Skubal is an L.A. Dodger. Do you think this is going to be as bad as it seems it could be in terms of having baseball next year? What would you put? I'll ask it this way. Over, under 50.5 games played next season for the baseball season.
I'm always a glass half full kind of guy. These sort of things don't get moving well until they need to get moving. There'll be more than 50 games next year. I would draw the line in the sand. Are they going to be 162? Probably not. But I do think we're going to have baseball. I do think it'll be 100-plus games. The owners and the players are not going to lose out on the enormous amount of TV revenue that you get now with this postseason contract. And that, to me, is the biggest deal. Because if you don't have postseason games, that's where, for the economics of the sport, it's absolutely catastrophic. And I'm totally with you. I want to circle back to what you just said about the Dodgers. They are not breaking any rules here. And here's the other dirty little secret. They have a loaded minor league system because they are such a well-run organization. Yes, they spend a ton of money. Yes, they're able to do these deferred contracts that have helped them in signing a bunch of guys over the last few years. So, hey, you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. Like, they're not doing anything that's against the the rules as far as anything is concerned of what you can and what you can't do. And they have a loaded system. We may say, hey, it didn't seem like they went above and beyond to go and get Scooble, but somebody was interested. This is not, oh my goodness, the Dodgers, how dare you? How can you go and do this? This to me is looking at the Tampa Bay Rays and the Milwaukee Brewers. That's where I'm starting, Will, because those two teams desperately needed Tarek Skubal. If you put Tarek Skubal with Jacob Mizorowski and they had a 1-2 punch going into the postseason in Milwaukee, a team hasn't been in a World Series since the 1980s, they got a legit shot. Tampa, in a wide-open American League, adds Tarek Skubal with McClanahan and with Rasmussen. They got a legit shot. My question is, why couldn't those teams go and beat the package and beat the offer that the Dodgers were giving out? And this is where conspiracy, JJ, comes to the forefront. Well, I think these mid-market owners, Detroit specifically, they're totally okay trading Skubal to the Dodgers because they look at it and say, hey, we got a good enough package. Let them go win. Let them go be the 98 Yankees, 99 Yankees, have a postseason run where basically they lose one game and maybe three series and nobody really gives them much of a scare. And that way we can go to the negotiating table in November, December, and beyond and say, hey, this is problematic. This is not sustainable. We need a salary cap. So I do think there's some of that. Am I maybe being a little too nutso as far as that goes? Maybe, maybe not. But that's where conspiracy theory JJ is kicking in.
Not the craziest thing I've ever heard. Let me ask you, you got to put your annual salary on the line. And trust me, for people that don't know, you make plenty of money. SNY, VSIN, the Bet Rivers deal, you're making Dodgers type money yourself.
I don't know about that. We're doing okay.
We get the Dodgers or the field.
We're doing poorly, but we're doing okay. We're not making Shohei Ohtani money. We're doing okay.
Dodgers or the field, everything on the line. Where are you going? Win the whole thing.
So funny you asked me this question. Our guy, Jared Moore, who's working with us today, our esteemed producer, was trying to make the argument to me before the show. We didn't get into it full stock, but we brought it up. Hey, maybe now is the time to go and capitalize on betting the field. Now is the time to do it. I couldn't do it because I've kind of felt all year the Dodgers are going to go and three-peat. It's the way I felt in the wintertime. Nothing has really changed from that stance. I don't even care about what takes shape in these regular season games over the final 2 months. And listen, we're going through a series right now at the moment, Will, but the Dodgers have just lost the first two games to the red-hot Boston Red Sox. So I get that. I get that Ohtani's not pitching at the moment. You want to tell me short series in baseball, anything can happen. Toronto, not could have, should have beat the Los Angeles Dodgers a year ago in the World Series. That all may be true. I ask you this, Will. Who's beating them? Right? Like, you can tell me better number. You can tell me I got all the other teams in the postseason field. Who's the team that I can look at lining up mano a mano against the Dodgers and say, you know what? This team could go and take them out. I can't find you one. That's the problem.
On one hand, the way you phrase it, the answer is nobody. On the other hand, like the logical answer is anybody because it's baseball and especially that best 3 out of 5. And remember, it's not that long ago, JJ, 2022 and 2023, they got whitewashed in the playoffs. I think the Padres beat them in 4 and the Diamondbacks swept them out of nowhere. And then they were down 2-1 to the Padres in 2024 at San Diego facing Dylan Cease. Dodgers throwing a bullpen game. It was about to be 3 years in a row. They didn't make it out of the divisional round. And they were sort of at the level they're at now where it's just, man, the Dodgers get everybody. But they never won. And to your point, they not only could have lost last year to the Blue Jays, they should have, probably should have lost to the Padres a couple years ago after, should have lost to the Blue Jays in the World Series here. So that being said, it's just, I think the biggest, threat to the Dodgers is just the nature of Major League Baseball postseason where best 3 out of 5, you lose that first game in a best 3 out of 5, you're in some trouble where it goes so quickly. I mean, if this series against the Red Sox were a playoff series, you're down 2-0, you're pretty much done. So that's the issue, the format and just the randomness of it. I would say from that standpoint, that's their biggest obstacle is just overcoming just the random nature of Major League Baseball in the playoffs.
And to that point, Will, I think if the Dodgers are going to get knocked off here, it will not come in the World Series. I don't know if you feel this way. If the Dodgers, we have not seen a repeat, or a three-peat, excuse me, not a repeat. We have not seen a three-peat since the days of the 98, 99, 2000 New York Yankees, a team that you and I love dearly. They'll always have a special, special place in our hearts. Altuve, you think about David Wells, who was there in 98. I mean, I could run through the laundry list of 98, 99, 2000 Yankees, Bernie O'Neill, Tino. I could go on and on and on. The point being is, if they make it to the World Series, Will, and they can smell it, and they can taste it, and they're four wins away, that's where I almost feel it's a fait accompli. If they're going to get knocked off, it's that first-round series, it's early in the postseason, I expect that to be a more likely formula. Don't you get the sense Dodgers make the World Series and not losing?
Yeah, and I'll give you a team. I mean, how about Philly marches in there in the divisional round, and they got their pitching maybe not lined up because they'll probably have to play best of three, but let's just say they can somehow go 1-1 and then have, you know, Wheeler Sanchez for 3-4 back in Philly. All of a sudden, you know, those guys throw seven shutout innings and the Dodgers are in some trouble. Do you think, and we can talk about this more the rest of the show, obviously, do you think this makes other teams more aggressive here at the deadline? Or do they say, you know what, the Dodgers are the Dodgers. Let's maybe be a little bit conservative. That'll be interesting here as we're a day or so away from the deadline.
That is a very interesting point by my esteemed colleague. And when we come back, a lot more coming up here on this VSiN Weekend Morning Line. Yes, we have all our training camp stuff, a lot of football coming your way on the pro side and on the college side. But the rest of this baseball deadline, maybe there's a team we should pinpoint in the odds market that might be super aggressive over the next 48 hours. Who could that team be? What's going to shake out? Just getting warmed up. JJ and Will, come right back.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. VSiN Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with VSiN Pro.
You're tuned in to the VSiN Weekend Morning Line.
Welcome back. It is a Sunday edition of the VSiN Weekend Morning Line. It's John Jastrzemski alongside Will Hill, and we'll dive into what the rest of this trade deadline will look like and how it could impact the odds in both the American League and the National League, depending on what else is going to take shape here. But if you were sleeping late last night, or maybe you were off the social media, the rich get richer. Tarek Skubal, who's going to be a free agent at the end of the year, he will not be finishing up 2026 as a member of the Detroit Tigers. He's now a Los Angeles Dodger. The Dodgers going ahead, the two-time back-to-back American League Cy Young winner. And now go and try to chase down a three-peat. Tarek Skubal's not going to be chased down a three-peat as far as the Cy Young goes, trading leagues. He does have a chance to go and win his first World Series. So here is the new Dodger ace on the trade and what it means for his future.
At this time, I'm excited to be a Dodger. You know, I'm excited to get down there and meet all those guys and, you know, chase three championships in a row. You know, it's hard to do, so I'm excited to be a part of that. But yeah, it's a lot of different emotions. You know, definitely kind of a roller coaster a little bit.
I imagine one of the tough parts of this not being able to kind of finish the mission with those guys in there that you
yeah.
do a lot with. How tough is that?
Yeah, very tough. You know, all off season that was, you know, ever since that 24 game five, the failure that I experienced on the mound. I've used that as fuel to try and bring a World Series to the city of Detroit. You know, I truly did. And that whole offseason, I was never been more motivated. And then, you know, go in and we lose game five again. And, you know, that failure kind of sparks some more motivation, you know, and just to dig deeper and see how good you can truly be. And, you know, the goal was always to win a World Series, you know, for the city, for the organization. That took a chance on me. So, yeah, it's tough. You know, I love all those guys in there. They're some of my best friends, you know, and Yeah, it'll be tough for sure.
Maybe tough emotionally, but very easy to get over when you're going to the Dodgers, and now you have a chance to go win a World Series, and the Dodgers have a chance to win a third straight World Series. Here's the question, Will. You asked me, does the Skubal trade to L.A. trigger some more aggressiveness from teams realizing, dare I say, we have to go and go for it? Here's my question. To what end? There's not going to be an arm on the market as impactful as Tarek Skubal. Is Freddy Peralta going to get traded? Is Clay Holmes going to get traded? Yes and yes. But I ask you, who is the version of another player that can have the same sort of impact that Tarek Skubal can? Let's say Mason Miller, and I thought the San Diego Padres were going to sell. I bet them under 81.5. I don't love the way they've played here, Will, over the last week, and now the talk around the Padres is, no, we're not selling. We may look to add to our team over the next 48 hours, over the next 2 days. So if it's not Mason Miller, Will, who's moving the market the way Tarek Skubal's moving the market?
Oh, nobody. Nobody even close. The question now, and I don't think Miller is going to be traded. Like you said, they're a game out of a playoff spot. And here's the thing we haven't mentioned here, almost, you know, 20 minutes into the show. Detroit's won a couple of games. Detroit's only 2.5 out, so I thought maybe they would play it up until the wire and play Sunday and just see where they're at. Man, if you wake up tomorrow, if you're a game and a half out of a playoff spot, you win today and these other teams lose, man, would you really trade Skubal? But they didn't let it come to that. They had their mind made up, which, you know, I want to get your thoughts on too. But nobody. The question now, I mean, you're always going to get relievers to go. You're going to get Clay Holmes probably to go. Mets are going to trade you a million guys. You know, Four Frames Freddy, as he's referred to, which is a mean nickname, but it's funny. The question is, do you get a Shocker? Do you get a Lindor, a Mike Trout, a Devers? I mean, I think the answer is no, and it might be an overwhelming no. I remember just, you know, as a kid growing up, you would get some Shockers. You'd get, you know, Ruben Sierra for Cecil Fielder and those type of moves. I think what was the Yankees traded? Cecil Fielder for Tartable for Cecil Fielder, and they flipped Cecil Fielder, I think, for Sierra.
No. You had it right. Nowhere. It was Tartable for Ruben Sierra. And then you're absolutely right. You nailed it. See, you can't second guess yourself, Will. It was Ruben Sierra for Cecil Fielder in 1996.
Yeah, great move. And the Yankees were just always so uber aggressive. But no, I think, look, it'll be a lot of like relievers. It'll be the Michael Walkers of the world. The Blue Jays will trade you guys. You know, they'll trade you Bieber. I would imagine Kevin Gausman goes somewhere. Gausman could be an underrated kind of pickup, but nothing where, oh man, this guy went to that team, now I have to go bet him. Do you have any names in mind, teams in mind of things, or is it just kind of moving the furniture around at this point?
Can I give you two teams that we didn't think were going to be sellers at the beginning of the year? We probably didn't think they were going to be sellers 2 weeks ago, and the calculus has changed a little bit. One, Toronto. You mentioned Bieber, Gausman, Springer. Maybe they put Varlin on the market. Those are some names that could really, really help a contending team. So a lot of people thought Toronto was going to go and get themselves back in the race. I know they're four out of a spot. The American League is so bad. So technically, like from a mathematics standpoint, it's really, really hard to be out of a spot. But like, don't let the eyes fool you. Toronto's been a huge flop this year. And I fully expect that they're going to move some guys between now and Monday night. The other team will. And they were the second favorite in the American League at the beginning of the year. And I don't know if it's necessarily going to be like Seattle full tilt sells players. But there's a restocking going on with the Mariners. They've already traded Castillo. There's talks they could move George Kirby. Would it shock me at this point if they took somebody like Randy Arozarena and put him on the market? Not really. And by the way, Will, if they do, that's a guy the Yankees should be all over. Like, you think about certain players and how they fit certain teams. Arozarena would be a slam dunk with his playoff prowess, his edge, his sort of energy he brings to the table. If Seattle's trading him, the Yankees better make that call. But a team to watch as far as being a big-time buyer and adding to their pitching market, the Braves, who are sitting there at 11-1 right now. And we talk about teams that match up poorly or match up well with the Dodgers. Weirdly, Atlanta plays them tough. They beat them in the playoffs many moons ago. They score runs against them. They need to upgrade their pitching staff. either Coy Holmes or Freddie Peralta makes a lot of sense for them. Makes a lot of sense for them. And I'll tell you this with Peralta. He's been embarrassing with the Mets. We have done a great job of fading him like crazy this year and making a lot of money doing so. I think some team is going to get Freddie Peralta, make a couple of tweaks, and he's going to look like Freddie Peralta, Milwaukee. Like, that is a guy I absolutely would go get if I were a team. I'd go and get him.
Wouldn't surprise me. New lease on life. He goes somewhere and he goes back to being a really good pitcher. That wouldn't shock me at all. But again, the names you and I are mentioning, Gausman, Michael Wacha. I mean, these guys can help you. And you know what? One in the playoff series, they throw a big game. That's you get what you paid for and you're happy you made the deal. But I'm hoping we get an exciting deadline. I think just as fans, we're always rooting for moves and trades and exciting things to happen. I'm not sure the next 24, 36 hours are going to bring that. Again, you're going to get probably the volume of moves and relievers and things like that. And the Mariners, by the way, I get your point, and they probably felt like they had a surplus of pitching. Castillo has not been great anyway, and they got this kid, Cade Anderson, this minor league pitcher who they can now bring up, and that can kind of replace it. So I don't know that they're going to be in a sell, and they're only two games out. So we'll see. I love the deadline. It's always been one of my favorite days in the year. I remember as a kid, this is just like, this is the best. You just sit down, watch baseball tonight, and you just watch all the moves trickle in. It's not quite that anymore. I think the amount of teams that make the playoffs hurt the deadline because we talk about all these teams. There's just not that many sellers. Everyone is either in the playoffs or within a couple games of the playoffs, and that kind of hurts the deadline. But we'll get the volume moves. I just don't think we get the earth-shattering move. I'd love to see Trout move. I'd love to see Lindor move. I'd love to see a lot of these big moves happen. And I wish Trout would just go to a situation where he could be relevant for the last, third of his career instead of just wasting away with the Angels. But that doesn't seem like that's really on the table at this point.
Should be a Philly. That's all there is to it. Mike Trout should be a Philly, but that's up to Mike Trout. Now's the time to get ready for college football and the VSiN College Football Betting Guide. It comes out tomorrow. Sign up for VSiN Pro today and you'll get instant access to our NFL Betting Guide. Then receive our College Football Betting Guide when it's released. This coming Monday, you'll get previews of all 138 FBS teams, our preseason top 50, power ratings, proven betting systems, and best bets from VSiN's sharpest minds. Plus, you'll receive the Fantasy Life Fantasy Football Guide, daily best bets, real-time betting splits, AI-powered prop projections, and 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. Start today for just $9.99 or get a full year and save 50% with a VSiN Pro annual subscription. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe now. That is VSiN.com/subscribe. It's been a lot of baseball, Will Hill, to start the first half hour of the show, but the football fever, it's here. We're ready, and we got you all set in college and in the pros to go and capitalize on what these futures markets are going to look like. So Anthony Herron, Big Ten Network, Score in Chicago, SiriusXM College, he's going to join us and make sense of what this revamped Big Ten looks like. Ohio State, the team to beat, what the Cignetti in Indiana have for an encore, all that more. Break down the Big Ten coming up next.
You're tuned in to the VSiN Weekend Morning Line.
Welcome back. It is a Sunday edition of the VSiN Weekend Morning Line. It is John Jastrzemski alongside Will Hill. And we're going to get some good perspective here on what the Big Ten is going to look like. And not only the Big Ten, we're going to Chi-Town, which means we got to talk some Bears with Anthony Herron. Check him out. Big Ten Network, The Score in Chicago, SiriusXM College, all that good stuff. Anthony, right out of the gate here. Should I be throwing a couple of bucks down on Caleb Williams to go and win the MVP? Because last year he finished the season with a flurry. There have always been questions about whether or not, hey, he can harness all of this talent. He can harness all of this ability. He was lights out down the stretch of that Packer playoff game. Even though they lost the Ram game in the divisional round, the play he had to send in the overtime still has me buzzing. I'm still sick to my stomach because I had the Rams laying 3.5 in that game, but that's a story for a different day. But now another year in the Johnson system. Are you expecting MVP type of numbers and a type of year for Caleb?
I'll say this. I don't know what the line is exactly, like what kind of odds you're getting on it at this point. if nothing else, because like you mentioned, there's a lot to be excited about with Caleb. And this combination with he and Ben Johnson for their second season together, I was just at Hallis for a couple of days, working camp for NFL Radio. I cover the Bears all year in Chicago with multiple outlets like you referenced there. And it does seem to me, I've been covering Bears training camp for a number of years, been following this team closely. Just through the first few days of camp, I've never seen a passing attack look as fluid and as in rhythm as what I was just witnessing in Hallis in recent days here. So Bears fans should be excited. I think football fans should have big expectations for Caleb Williams, for Ben Johnson, for all the weaponry the Bears have available offensively. Now, they are practicing against a defense that lost some of their best playmakers from last season. And frankly, aside from the takeaways, the defense struggled a lot last year. So I'm trying to keep that within context, but you know, there's going to be a lot of excitable Bears fans who are already going to be voting, you know, and put some money down on Caleb Williams to win MVP. So I don't know what kind of odds you're going to get on it, but I got to tell you, man, he's looking really good so far.
All right, Anthony, let's switch gears here to college. And I want to talk about Oregon because they got a quarterback who could have been the second pick in the draft last year. And they've got just an embarrassment of riches on the defensive line. Everyone loves Dan Lanning as a coach. They're loaded with talent. That being said, the elephant in the room to me, the last 3 years, the way their season have ended have been so loud. Ohio State's up 40-0 before the national anthem is over. Last year, Indiana ran them off the field. And even 3 years ago now, Washington in the final Pac-12 title game, Oregon was like a 10-point favorite and was never in the game. What do you make of these losses for a coach that we all love in big games? And what do you expect from Oregon this season?
So just talking to Dan Lanning about that a few days ago, Will, when we were at Big Ten Media Days, and his sense was that, yes, they had been building towards something last season in 2025, but some of the inexperience that was there showed up for the Ducks. And you look at the last few years that Oregon's been able to make the college football playoff. They won the Big Ten in their first season there. And then last year, while Indiana won the Big Ten, Oregon was right there with another fantastic year. When Dan Lanning tends to lose games at Oregon, it's frequently to the team that goes on to either win or compete for the national championship. So there's no reason to think the Ducks won't have another stellar year. And like you were just talking about a moment ago, Dante Moore, extremely gifted as a quarterback. I've been covering him, interviewing him since he was in high school. He plays in the All-America Bowl. I've been calling that game for over a decade for NBC. And he's got this composure about him. And I think there's a lot of parallels with Dante Moore and Ohio State's quarterback Julian Sain. We're both guys very young and their first full-time season as starters last year. And you're trying to find where are those moments where they were tested. I think Julian Sain, once he got into the playoff, you really saw him have to try and sort of lift Ohio State up under duress for the first time in the schedule the Buckeyes faced last season. Now, Ohio State's going to have a much tougher schedule this season in the regular season. But from Dante Moore's perspective, there were moments throughout that regular season in 2025 where he had to rise up in big moments. I think he learned from those, that sort of, you know, being sort of put through the fire, being thrown into the deep end, all those kind of cliches that we can use. We saw Dante Moore have to thrive in some of that in the face of injuries at wide receiver and running back and offensive line. And so much of that returns intact and with depth this year. I have a hard time not viewing Oregon as the pick to click in another season where the Big Ten is going to be remarkably deep. But yes, Ohio State and Indiana. Indiana has lost some pieces that really joined Kurt Cignetti when he first came to Bloomington. But how do you count out the Hoosiers at this point? And a couple of other squads that may be that tier just below where I have a couple of more question marks. But Oregon, to me, that's the team that I feel most certain about, most sure about, just with the totality of what they bring to the table.
Okay, I want to hit on Indiana. Cignetti is a wizard. We all know that. But he loses the number one overall pick in the draft. They lose a lot of NFL talent. Reasonably speaking, Anthony, reasonably speaking, what are expectations that, in your estimation, would be satisfactory for the Hoosiers?
So, John, going into last season, I was the guy saying, man, Indiana made the CFP in Cignetti's first year in 2024. We got to calm down. We can't just assume in 2025 that the Hoosiers are going to make the playoff again. It's losing his program in college football history. Just if they would have made a bowl game and maybe even won a bowl game, that still would have been a historic two-year start to Kurt Cignetti's time. Now, after going undefeated at a time in college football where the season is longer and more arduous than ever, for them to be able to go undefeated and win the national championship, I'm done trying to put any sort of a regulator on Kurt Cignetti and what he can accomplish in Bloomington. Now, yes, you lose the number one overall pick. They lost Curtis Rourke the year before. So with Josh Hoover coming in at quarterback for the Hoosiers, if nothing else, we've seen at every stop that Kurt Cignetti and his coaching staff can develop quarterback talent. What's a little different about Hoover? Yes, Fernando Mendoza can move. That was a part of the formula that led him to being the number one overall pick in the NFL draft. But he wasn't necessarily and isn't necessarily a runner at quarterback. Josh Hoover is a runner, a scrambler, a playmaker beyond the X's and O's of how a play is designed. That fascinates me because at previous stops, Kurt Cignetti had quarterbacks who were more mobile, viewed more truly as dual threat, multi-dimensional types of talents at QB. This will be the first time in Bloomington that he has that. If he can combine that mobility of Josh Hoover with sort of, you know, tamping down the turnovers that Sonny Dykes has talked about that Hoover suffered through at TCU, he'll have another guy who's got that Big Ten Offensive Player of the Year kind of potential because of the way Indiana can coach offense.
Anthony, I had a buddy that was at Big Ten Media Day, and he spoke to Michigan State coach Pat Fitzgerald. And after the meeting, he said, "Hey, coach, you know, good to see you. Good luck this year." And Fitzgerald says, "Thanks. We're going to need it." Over under four wins. I think it's going to be a long year. I like the under four wins here. What are you hearing here from Michigan State and their new coach?
I really like the fit for Pat Fitzgerald in East Lansing, but yeah, it's a first season, and there's a lot of newness for the Spartans and for Fitz. And, you know, we got to remember as well, the last couple of years that Pat Fitzgerald was at Northwestern, as college football was in the infancy of starting to sort of shift and evolve in the way that we've continued to see it evolve here in recent years. You know, it's a Michigan State team that they're in search of how this fit will work. Alessio Milivojevic, he's a talented quarterback, but he's been inconsistent, and there's so much talent that had to be added to the program from last season as Jonathan Smith got ousted. So there's a lot of question marks. I don't know exactly what the Spartans roster will look like top to bottom, but it's a quality coaching staff that he has in place. He decided to keep Joe Rossi, who's coached a lot of quality defense in the Big Ten, was able to swipe LeVar Woods from Iowa for special teams. And so the complementary football approach will be one that'll have to be leaned into by Pat Fitzgerald and East Lansing. But in this first season, it does feel to me like it'll be sort of a, you know, feeling out sort of period for how he'll be able to lead Spartans football. This is not a year where I expect huge things for Michigan State in year one.
Anthony, you were great, man. We appreciate a couple of minutes, all the good perspective on the Bears and what the Big Ten is going to look like. Football season, my man, right around the corner. So you sharpen those irons. We'll talk in a couple of weeks, and keep up the good work, okay?
JJ, we'll appreciate you both.
Thanks, good stuff, Anthony. There from Anthony Heron. A lot more coming your way. Baseball, I feel like, I just keep updating my Twitter feed. Any trades? I don't know if we're going to have one that will top what happened last night with Tarek Skubal going to the Los Angeles Dodgers, but if there's breaking trade news and we see the odds move and we see the markets move, we got you covered on that. And what to make of this Big Ten Conference? There's a win total. I've already bet. I'm on the over. We'll see if I can get my guy Will Hill on board with this particular team coming out of the Big Ten. I think they got Cupcake City as far as that schedule is concerned. We'll dive into that coming up next.
You're tuned in to the VSiN Weekend Morning Line.
the Visa Weekend Morning Line. It's Will Hill alongside John Jastrzemski. And yes, Tarek Skubal's a Dodger. A lot more on that to come. And I hope at some point over the next 48 hours, we do have a moment that will rival that in some way. I think it's going to be difficult. I'm trying to maybe, dare I say, will it into existence. No pun intended with my guy Will Hill right there. The issue is going to be, I don't know who can move the needle in this trade market the same way that a guy who won the Cy Young each of the last 2 years can go and move the trade market. Will, can I get you on board with a win total in college football? Don't know if you've bet it already. Can I get you to get on board with this? You ready?
How am I going to say yes when I don't know who you're going to ask me? I don't know. I mean,
well, because I'm trying to build. This is what we call the crescendo. This is what we call I'm setting you up here. And I want to make sure that you're totally dialed in, focused, and you're either going to give me a yay or you're going to give me a nay. The Penn State Nittany Lions are 20-1 to win the.
I knew you were going to say it. I already bet them plus 350 to make the playoffs. I think the look a 10-2.
All right, good boy. Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
A 10-2 Big Ten team.
So you're making the case very, very easy for me because it is a Will Hill, John Jastrzemski special. Now, there's no way in the world I would bet him a 20-1 to win the Big Ten. Because I do think there is a major talent discrepancy from what Penn State, getting all those Iowa State guys, turning into transfer you in Happy Valley, as far as Ohio State, as far as Indiana and Cignetti, and as far as Oregon with Moore and Lanning and all the talent they have. That schedule is such a joke, Will. And I think Matt Campbell's a better coach than James Franklin, like a significantly better head coach. And I know his stock has fallen a little bit from where it was a couple of years ago, where a lot of people looked at Matt Campbell and they said, hey, this guy is going to go and be an NFL head coach. It has kind of calmed down on that front. But look at this schedule. Marshall, at Temple, Buffalo, Wisconsin, at Northwestern. Dude, they should be undefeated going in that USC game on October the 10th. Like, I ask you this, Will, as you look at that schedule, where are the losses coming from a team that's got a preseason win total that's sitting there right now at 8.5? USC, at Michigan, at UW, okay. I think it's a 9-10 win team. I really do.
I'm with you. And again, I think a 10-2 Big Ten team will have a very real chance of getting in the playoffs. It's going to be hard to keep a Big Ten, which has won 3 national championships in a row, and the conversation is getting a little bit tedious. The SEC trying to beat their chest of how good they are in the Big Ten. You know, we win all these championships, which, look, it's fair. You win the championships. The SEC for years said, hey, we win all these championships. We're the best, which was fair then. It's but it gets exhausting, gets tedious, especially if you're on the outside looking in. You don't have any skin in the game. But USC does not travel well. They don't travel well west to east under Riley. It's been a big issue. That game is in Happy Valley. That's a big advantage for Penn State. So I would say out of USC, Michigan, Washington, maybe they lose 2 of them. Maybe they lose 1 of them. You can't just give them every single, 50-50 game. But I think we are looking at probably conversations in December about like a Penn State team that's 10-2, but really didn't beat anybody, doesn't have the most impressive schedule, versus, let's just say, Texas, who's really good and goes 9-3 and played a loaded schedule, Ohio State, all the big boys in the SEC. And they say, wait, okay, we've got one more loss than you guys do, but look who we played and look who you played. So those conversations are real. Those conversations are going to happen. But at plus 350 to make the playoffs and the over 8.5, I endorse both bets there with Penn State. I totally agree. And Campbell, boy, what was it? I think it was pre-COVID. Was it like 2019 or so? He was the Jets, the Lions. He turned down like big money, not like, hey, we'll take a shot on this guy. I think there was like $90-100 million offers for him. I have to go back and check the stories. He was a hot coach in college and really towards the NFL, where teams, I think when Detroit struck out on him, they pivoted to Dan Campbell. I believe that I have that time frame right. But yeah, his stock has certainly plummeted a bit, but everything is there for Penn State to have like a 9-10 win season. And I think by the time the season starts, people will start to place more bets. The secret will be out a little bit more, that the schedule is so watered down that Penn State is a play to the over and a play to make the playoffs.
And normally I hate laying crazy juice with these win totals because, as you know, it's just sitting in your account now for the next 3.5 months. Yeah. So that's anything but ideal. But at the number that's being presented at 8.5 over a DraftKings, sign me up, lay the juice. Penn State is going to be a 9-plus win team, I think, this season. I want to go back to what we were just chatting about, though, with Anthony, as far as the odds atop this conference. Do you have Oregon, Will, as the team to beat within the Big Ten? Because that was kind of the case it felt like that Anthony was making.
Yes, but I would look more towards national title, maybe Dante Moore Heisman. I think Oregon's really good. Like, the whole defensive line is back. They got pros everywhere. They got a quarterback that was about to be the second pick in the draft. I think it gets under-discussed because people love Lanning, and he gives you a good quote, and he's good with the media, and he's just, he's very video-friendly, media-friendly with all of the speeches. I'm sure you've seen him, the behind-the-scenes. He knows how to capture a room. He knows how to win people over. But 3 years in a row, this is not like, you know what, we lost Ohio State 28-21, you know, tough one, we'll get up next year. The game's like 40-0 in the first half in a game that was a pick 'em. I think Oregon maybe was like a one-point favorite, a one-point dog game. It was basically a pick 'em New Year's Day a couple years ago. Indiana ran them off the field. Washington was a big underdog with DeBoer that Friday night, the final Pac-12 title game. Oregon wins, they go to the playoff. Oregon's like a 9-10-point favorite. Oregon was never in the game. This is three in a row that just not only losing big games, but losing them in very loud fashion. I don't know how you come to grips with that. I guess you could say, you know what, small sample. Each one has its own reason it happened. And nobody can win until they do. They did win a playoff game last year against Texas Tech, a game where Oregon was a small underdog. Texas Tech got bet before the game started. So I think Oregon's loaded, but I think it's unfair to just ignore those three losses in the 3 years in a row and the way the Oregon season has ended. But they're absolutely stacked from top to bottom here. Really good team.
Sports calendar never stops, and the short plays covers it all. And they've been winning for 15 straight years. All of it documented. The logs posted publicly, shortplays.com. That kind of transparency, it's rare in this industry. When the short plays moves, the sports books take notice. Advanced AI, trusted insider intel, they find a value before the numbers shift. Respected, watched, feared. Start winning with them at shortplays.com. Now, well, I got to say, normally when a team loses the amount of NFL talent that a program like Indiana just lost this past year, including Mendoza, who's the number one pick going to the Vegas Raiders, multiple first round picks, the dream season from Cignetti, like everything about their following year would lead you to believe, okay, they're going to regress. Here's the problem I keep having though with Indiana this season. That coach is so good. He's so special. He's such a badass. I don't want any action on unders for Indiana. I don't want to fade Indiana because to me, like, you're fading the best coach of college football at the moment. Am I crazy to be saying that? I don't think I am. When you go win the national championship at Indiana, I mean, enough said. I'm not in the market of fading Cignetti. No, thank you.
Yeah, there's better thing. I have better things to do with my money than to tie up money for a long time, to lay -110, to bet an under win total, to fade, this coach who's been so dominant. I mean, there is some regression you would think coming with. I think they're +37 in turnovers the last 2 years combined. I mean, you're playing cupcakes, you're going to turn them over, but a lot of that is Big Ten competition, and that's really unsustainable. But to your point, look, I'll go elsewhere. I'll take my money elsewhere. As opposed to betting against Indiana. I would think, though, still a playoff team, but more a bottom half of the playoff team, more like they were a couple years ago, where they get in, but they're like an 8 or a 9 seed as opposed to a 1 or 2 seed. They did lose a lot. The quarterback Hoover from TCU they bring in, kind of turnover prone, so they got some work to do there. I think still a playoff team. Like you said, bet against Cignetti at your own risk, but I have no bets either way here. I do think there's some reason for some regression.
Just think about this, Will. They go and make the playoff. Indiana in the playoff for 3 consecutive years in college football. Plus, you throw in a national championship. For a program that, like, if you go to the dregs and you go to the hopeless college football programs within the Power 5, like at the moment, Indiana was all of that and then some. Like, I have Indiana people in my life that I work with over at SNY, and they're like, yeah, we never thought we'd have a football program. I was a student at this school. I didn't even want to go to the football games. They were a waste of time. Nobody went to the football games. Now, all of a sudden, Indiana, forget about their basketball program. That's a football school, baby. Cignetti.
Hard to believe.
Real and spectacular.
Hard to believe.
We got a lot more coming your way. We got some NFL football breakdown and there was a certain picture of a certain famous tight end. Might have been packing on the pounds this offseason after his wedding with Miss Swift. And what to make of the Kansas City Chiefs for 2026 after missing the postseason, after a year from hell in 2025? Is it time for the Chiefs to just all of a sudden snap out of it? It's Mahomes, it's Reed, it's Kelsey, they're going to be back? Or is it possible the Chiefs could miss the playoffs back-to-back years? We'll dive into that. A lot more coming your way with Will and JJ right after this.